And welcome to episode 10 of season 9 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the Die Hard duo, the last two movies of Die Hard, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is Travis Bow of Minute of Thieves and Real Comic Heroes. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long time since I've watched this movie, so it was good to revisit it.
Oh wow! Okay, so why don't we start right there? What is your history and what are your thoughts about this movie?
I saw it once. I probably rented it, or you know, it's some form of watching it at home. I don't remember what year did this come out.
2007.
Okay, so yeah, I don't recall if it was a DVD rental or a Netflix at the time. You know, I have no idea, but watched it at home for sure. Enjoyed it, I think, you know, but never had the urge to revisit it. There were things in this movie that make me think I have not seen the fifth one, because for instance, when he fights a jet at the end, I thought, you know, The what just happened in the movie with the helicopter, I thought, oh, then the jet thing must be in the fifth movie, because there's no way they would do, you know,
both
him versus a helicopter and him versus a jet in the same movie. That would be crazy, Rob.
Yeah, it would.
But I was surprised to see that in this movie as well, so that leads me to believe that I have not seen the fifth one. But watching it for this, really enjoyed it. I had a good time throughout. You know, it's a solid movie. I probably like it better than the second one if I had to rank them. But yeah, it's a solid movie.
Okay. All right. I see. I normally would recommend that you go and watch 5, but 5 is crap. So
is it? Okay.
So you've been saved by not being given you know 15 minutes of that movie to talk about.
And it's possible that if and when I ever watch the fifth one, I might be like, oh, wait, I have seen this one. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I've seen it. What's that one called?
Good Day to Die Hard.
Good Day to Die Hard.
It takes place in Russia.
Yeah, I remember the trailers for it. And I know Jai Courtney is his son.
Exactly. He
okay.
Basically, John McClane travels to Russia to go help his son, who apparently has gotten into some trouble in Russia. And then he ends up finding out that his son, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't listened to this or hasn't seen the movie, it turns out his son like works for the CIA and is a spy. And
He
really didn't.
That does not,
help, you know, that type of
that
thing.
Does not sound familiar. Okay.
Yeah. And again, it's just a crazy, crazy movie. And I am so glad that I will not be doing that 1 minute by minute.
Sure.
I can't say I'm happy doing 5 minutes of it, but you know, I'm a completionist.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, I didn't really have much of a choice. Episode 10 begins with John being quite proud of himself, and ends with Gabriel acting very patiently as he is quite giddy and happy. So I mean, we ended things yesterday with John somehow taking out a helicopter with a police car. Now we discussed this obviously a little bit yesterday about the implausibility of it and the way that the trajectory works and all that stuff. But again, when you're watching a movie like this, which is partially why I don't categorize it in the same category as the original Die Hard trilogy, is that these two movies don't make any sense whatsoever from a reality perspective.
Sure.
The first three, you can sort of believe most of what happens, that it's possible.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not an action superhero in the other three as much as he is here.
Right. You see, which again is I like this one more than five for sure. But when I think of this movie, you know, when I think of Die Hard and when I think of John McClane, I think of a character who is an everyman. You know, he's someone who could be any one of us. He's thrust into these situations and he must deal with it and stuff like that. And again, in 1, 2, and 3, that's what he does. And then here comes 4, which starts off seemingly in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last few days, that just completely went sideways. You know, once he entered the tunnel, that was it. You know, all the crap that was happening in the tunnel itself is also completely implausible. And then shooting the car outside of the toll booth, no.
Yeah.
Not real. Not real at all.
It kind of enters the Fast and Furious sort of, you know, action stunt spectacular realm.
Which I think was what they were going for here, but they they completely killed the idea of the Die Hard franchise from that perspective.
Yeah.
Or at least they killed the way we look at John McClane.
Hmm.
You know, which again, this movie has its moments, and it's not a terrible movie, but it just doesn't fit in properly with the rest of the trilogy in my or the first trilogy, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, in my eyes and stuff like that. So yeah. John is just lying there against the a car. He just like looks at Matt and says to him, "Pretty lucky shot."
I like this pairing. I like Justin Long quite a bit, and mm-hmm. so I like him throughout the movie. I think they work really well off each other. And I like the back at the little one-liners here about, you know, I was out of bullets, you know, that's good. And then him just where he's John asks if how Matt's doing. He's like, I scraped my knee, I'm got some asthma or something like that. You know, it's like this dude just the jumping out of the moving car alone would be enough to, you know, and any of us, you know.
Right. Exactly.
So,
and so John says, pretty lucky shot. And then Farrell goes, yeah, lucky. That was, you just killed a helicopter with a car. He goes, I was out of bullets. And he goes, how you doing? He goes, I skinned my knee. My asthma's acting up.
And I can't tell if he's saying that as a joke, like, you know, as if like, oh, I got it bad too, you know, that kind of thing. Or was he being serious? Like, well, you know,
I think he's being very serious. I think you know, the nerd in Farrell is talking this way. He's not like John. You know, he's not used to these type of things. And so I think he really is being serious here. When he goes, yeah, I skinned my knee and my asthma's acting up. He goes, whatever, yeah, I'm fine. And then John says, give me a hand. And he says, you shouldn't jump out of cars.
So, do you know, with this being another movie where it pairs John up with another citizen, you know, mm-hmm. Has anyone criticized the movie for that? You know, because it's essentially he's kind of the same, not the same pairing, but it's similar enough with Die Hard with a Vengeance of putting John with a normal citizen, unquote, you know.
Okay, I agree with you on that there is some similarity there. But on the other hand, Zeus and John are a great pairing because they are complete opposites.
Sure.
When it comes to that. And they mesh really well. The thing with Farrell is the in my opinion, the reason that they brought him here is, you know, to show the generational gap. Yeah. You know, in Die Hard with Vengeance, it wasn't a generational gap. They were both on a level playing field. You know, they were just complete opposites. And there were characters with complete different outlooks on life. Here, this is, you know, a young computer hacker. You know, mm-hmm. into technology. We know John hates technology. He's always talked about how he hates technology. Mm-hmm. In this movie, he mentions it also. You know, and here he's dealing with someone who is a technophobe, I guess you can call it, something like that. You know, so I think on the one hand, I agree with you that pairing seems similar, but on the other hand, it's completely different because of the type of interactions that they need to make. You know, that's a thing.
And don't get me wrong, I like the pairing. I just wasn't sure. I don't know what the reputation of this movie is really. I didn't know if that was a recurring criticism of this movie or not. I just didn't know.
It could be. You're talking about with the last three guests. Again, there were different opinions on it. Nobody hates Sparrow. You know, he's not a character that one should hate.
Yeah.
But when you look at him, he's just, you know, he's very different than John in a very different way than Zeus was different than John. You know,
I like that they pair him up with someone who is sort of involved with the plot. You know, it's interesting because like Bruce Willis has done so many of these types of movies. Like you could look at his career and make so many of them Die Hard movies, which I know is kind of the thing with Die Hard movies, is they usually start out as something else. And then someone at a studio level will say, let's just make this a Die Hard movie. Let's just make the main character John McClane and, you know, bada bing. I'm thinking of things like Mercury Rising.
Oh, I knew. You know what? That was the first one that came to mind when you said.
Yeah.
That.
16. Is it 16 blocks? Is that the one with Mos Def, where he has to just literally get him across town without him getting killed? You know, and that's kind of what you got here. I do wish they would lean into that a little bit more, because like he saves him at the apartment building from getting killed, and then Gabriel's men, like, they're not, you know, making it their mission to kill Farrell. So I kind of wish the rest of the movie or not the rest of the movie, but a little bit more of the movie was him literally trying to protect this kid from getting, you know, killed.
Okay, it's understood.
Overall, it works, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So then the scene changes, and we see Rand looking at the smoldering remains of the helicopter. You know, got me thinking that you know, I went in and looked online to try and find like a top five or top 10 list of helicopter scenes in movies.
Okay.
So I actually found one that's a top 12. Okay, so the first one, number 12 on this list, is the scene in Tomorrow Never Dies where James Bond is on a motorcycle that flies over a helicopter.
Oh, sure.
Okay, number 11 is Escape from LA, the helicopter explosion scene. Number 10 is from Blue Thunder, the 1983 Roy Scheider film. Have you ever seen that? You ever heard of it?
No. I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Okay. Number 9 is Black Hawk Down. The helicopter scenes are just amazing. Have you seen that one?
I've seen it, but a long time ago. I have no real recollection of it. I know there are a lot of helicopters in the movie. Was there one action scene?
There are a bunch of action scenes where they're shooting and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Where they take out like buildings of, you know, levels of buildings of terrorists and things like that.
Okay.
Number 8 is the helicopter scene with Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Sure.
Which I always loved that ever since I saw the trailer of the movie before it even came out.
Is that specifically the police station scene when he jumps the bike into the motorcycle the bike into the helicopter, or?
Yeah, and then he enters the helicopter and tells the guy to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number 7 is this movie, the scene that we just had yesterday. Number 6 is from Kong Skull Island.
Oh, okay.
Where Kong, starts swatting Huey's.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good scene, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great scene. Number 5 is Outbreak. You know, the movie that nobody really thought was ever plausible till COVID happened.
I loved Outbreak as a kid. I watched that one a bunch as a kid, but I don't remember any helicopter sequences.
There's one where they finally capture the animal, and they have a helicopter chase scene.
You know, that's right.
To save the helicopter. Have you seen it since COVID?
No. But I think I remember it's is it the scene where Dustin Hoffman is like, I'm talking to the pilots of the helicopter, and she's trying to like reason with those guys or something?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm
Okay.
pretty sure. It's also been a few years since I have seen it since COVID.
Yeah.
I actually probably saw it like the week that COVID broke out.
Sure.
Because it was like, oh, this thing is just gonna be around for like a week or whatever it is, you know. So I was like, okay,
Yeah.
I'm quickly gonna watch movies that are related to pandemics, you know.
Oh, no.
Because that's not gonna last for long. That's the thing. Little did we know. Number four is Mission Impossible Fallout.
Okay.
It's when he's chasing when they're having a helicopter chase within mountains.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three is Rambo First Blood Part Two,
Okay. Yeah.
where it's the end where he Rambo takes on a what's it, a Sikorsky helicopter, I think that's what they're called. Number
And
two,
three has a really good helicopter fight too.
it's true, right? It's not on this list. Number two is from Spectre, another James Bond one where they have a fight on the side of a helicopter.
Okay.
It's the beginning. It's the beginning of the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. Yep. In Mexico City, I think.
That's right. All right. Any guess what the number one would have been would be on this list?
I probably should. I think I don't know. Goldfinger has a good, or no, From Russia with Love has a good helicopter sequence. Although, yeah, I don't, no, I don't know.
Apocalypse Now.
Ah. Okay. I
Oh,
just watched that a few weeks ago for the first time.
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. And then they have an honorable mention on this scene, on this list, the Predator chopper scene.
Okay.
And what's really funny is they right here, despite the film not having any significant helicopter scenes, it's next to impossible to think of helicopters in the cinema without hearing Schwarzenegger's iconic line from Predator playing over and over in your head. Get to
Yeah.
the
Probably doesn't qualify because the vehicles aren't technically helicopters, but in Avatar, in that big final battle,
Oh yeah,
like
very true.
Michelle Rodriguez pilots one and like it's a helicopter. I mean, and you know, but I'm sure that it probably doesn't qualify because it's not technically, but
That's right. All right, so back to this movie. So we have Rand, looking at the remains of the helicopter
yeah.
on him, and then he gets on, he takes off his headphones, and staggers over to the helicopter, or the remains of the helicopter, and then you hear him talking on his walkie-talkie, and he said, you hear on the thing saying, "Rand, check in." And he goes, "The chopper's down." And then, "What about Farrell and McLean?" And he goes, "They're history."
Okay, I could not
Goes,
tell what this guy was saying.
okay. That's why subtitles helps.
I thought he was speaking French the whole time, and I thought
He
Gabriel
was.
also.
No,
Oh, okay.
Gabriel was talking English,
Okay.
and he was talking French, but the French was subtitled. So that's how I got
Gotcha.
the.
Okay.
So then he goes, "Come back in." Now,
Okay.
what's really interesting is what they're telling us is that Rand believes that John and Farrell were in the car.
Oh, okay.
Because why else would he
Yeah.
say their
Yeah.
history?
Sure. Yeah.
Which is pretty funny because I wouldn't think of McClane as a suicidal kamikaze.
Yeah, why would he think that they were in the car? That's foolish. I think it's funny that he takes the headphones down and puts them around his neck, and like those headphones were tied into the chopper. Like you don't need to keep those, buddy. You can take those off and throw them away.
At least
It's
he had
just
time
funny.
to. At least he had time to unplug
I think
him.
gravity just did that, you know, force. I don't think he purposefully did that. But yeah. It got me thinking like the henchmen in this movie, I think are like they're used well in the action scenes, like 'cause this guy did some parkour stuff either before this or coming up. Like it's coming up. Like he's he they're all good. they're well used as far as the action goes, but like I feel like the previous ones had better henchmen with personality. Mm-hmm. Like this guy, I just don't. I don't get any. I don't know who this guy is. You know, I found that like throughout the movie, Gabriel as the leader of this group. I don't know what this group represents. I don't know what they stand for. The previous groups of villains, you know, I think explained better like what they're fighting for, what they want to achieve. You know, Hans was just he was an exceptional thief. You know,
that's right.
The guys in
now
the second
I've
one
up to kidnapping, like, you should be a little nicer.
Yeah, the guys in the second one were like, you know, all ex-military. They all had grievances that they were, you know, pissed off about. The obviously Simon in the third one, like he, I felt like the army that he basically commanded, like they all were fighting. Like when he says, like tomorrow we'll find which country we want to buy. Like they're fight. They want to, you know.
They're mercenaries.
Like, yeah, yeah. Like with this group, I don't get any sense. I know they say that Thomas Gabriel he got fired. You know, the whole reason this thing came about is he was trying to warn the government about this happening, and then they let him go. I guess that, you know, I get what his motivations are. I just don't know why anyone else is following him. Like, I don't know. He's just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I do find their affiliation somewhat weak here.
Yeah.
From that perspective. Because they don't feel the need to even try and explain it. You know, they don't even give us like a bad explanation. We don't get any explanation.
There's no, we need a scene of exposition where the two feds that come in to the trailer, maybe tomorrow's minute, maybe, you know, give them a scene where they talk to Bowman and say like who these guys are, where he got all these mercenaries from, you know, just, I don't know, maybe.
Well, they don't yet know it's Gabriel. They haven't found it yet.
Sure.
You know, so that's part of it. I mean, if Bowman would have known that it's Gabriel, then he would have said, oh, Gabriel, obviously, of course, he's the guy we fired. And I mean, that's what happens later when they find out who Gabriel is. You know,
yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like John's comment from, I think he said it, maybe it was the beginning of this week, or maybe it was the end of last week, about the fact that you know, these guys feel like they're in the circus.
Mm.
You know, these are just random villains, you know, right?
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. So, Gabriel basically tells him to come back in, and mm-hmm. you know, we'll regroup. And he closes his phone, and then he gives an order to Casper, and says to him, "Okay, we're moving on. Begin stage 3." And then Casper responds and says, "I just spoke to Emerson. The team's arriving at Woodlawn now. Very good. My, get ready for the downloads." So what's very cool is, first of all, that they mention Woodlawn, and, you know, we obviously got to see the guys show up. You know, they're about to show up at Woodlawn itself.
Yeah.
Even though we saw Woodlawn, I think it was yesterday, you know, during the... during the anthrax attack the other day, doing 5 minutes each episode, I have to like think back how far back it is. It's not like I can always pinpoint exactly when it was. So Woodlawn, what do you believe that Woodlawn is a real place or not?
Mm. It's hard to say. I mean, it would not surprise me if the government has a facility like this, you know. If there is, would we know about it? Probably not, but I don't know.
Okay, so there is a Woodlawn in Maryland. Okay, it is
sure.
An unincorporated community that, according to the 2020 census, had roughly 40,000 people living there, and it is the home to the headquarters of the Social Security Administration and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Okay.
So it's a real place.
Okay.
You
Huh. I'm surprised that they,
think in a movie like this they would just make something up.
Yeah. Huh.
It's a little strange to me that they chose a real place.
Yeah.
Yes, it adds realism to the movie, but
Sure. Yeah.
so I don't know. So then the scene changes and we see a van, what looks like a hazmat van, show up at a gate, which we now know is Woodlawn because they just mentioned Woodlawn, and because yesterday we actually, or earlier this week, we actually saw a title on the screen saying that this is Woodlawn.
Oh, right.
And so one of the guards says, "ID, sir." And then he goes, "Park behind the transpo. We'll lead you in." And he turns to one of the other guys and goes, "Man the gate, you're with me." So, I mean, it's great that they show us that despite the alarms going off, these guards are still trying to follow procedure. They're not like
Sure.
panicked. They didn't say to themselves, "Oh my God, there was just an anthrax attack possibility. So, now we got to be more cautious." They see, okay, there was an anthrax possibility. We now have a hazmat unit that showed up. Great,
Yeah.
let's take care of this.
Yeah, they still use precaution. That's nice.
That's right. Exactly. And then we see inside the van the guys gearing up in these hazmat suits. And then we see them move inside, and they're inside the building. And then we hear one of the guards say, "Anthrax alarms only went off for 5 floors. Below that, you'll need DOD clearance." And then
I couldn't.
he also says, "I don't know why you need to go further. There's nothing down there but servers."
I couldn't confirm. I tried looking up this actor because they we the guy out, when he, we see him outside the gate, he's the one that approaches the van and says, "I'll take you down there." And then he's also the guy, once they get down here to this checkpoint, he's the one scanning the his ID or whatever, letting him in. And you can see just enough of his face through his the helmet goggles that he's wearing. I think did I write down his name? I think this is Lindsey Ginter, who is Kate's dad on Lost, and he was in, I mentioned before, Mercury Rising. He was like the main henchman in Mercury Rising. I think
Really?
this is him, but he's not credited in this movie, and I can't find anyone in this movie that looks like this guy. And I wondered if like maybe if someone was overdubbing his dialogue, then they wouldn't have to credit the actor, you know what I mean? Like it could be him, but they just didn't credit him because maybe they didn't use his real voice. I don't know. But yeah, I couldn't find anybody in the cast list that looks like this guy. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh wow.
Just
No,
one of those weird little things that I just saw him and thought I recognize that guy. I'm not 100% sure that it's him, but
interesting.
yeah.
Okay, we'll give you that one. How's
Yeah.
that?
I'll take it. I really like they do something here with this sequence where and it's like something I like in action movies when they do this, and they used it in Die Hard with a Vengeance when Simon goes to that ex securities exchange and, as Mr. Vanderflug or whatever. It's when his, in the foreground we see some of the henchmen take out like a security guard,
That's right, and
and
then you
then
see
you
stuff in the
notice
background.
in the background that another team of guys is doing, the same thing to another security guard or whatever, and they do that here, and it's so like it's good shorthand for showing like how good and effective these guys are as a team, because they kill this guy in the foreground with one shot with a silencer, and by the time he's falling to the ground, you see in the background the other guy is like dropping as well. And
Correct.
they didn't show it. You don't hear any, thing there. It's just well executed sort of maneuver, stealth kind of maneuver here that shows that this team is really good at what they're doing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. That works really well. And I liked also the fact that we get to see this actor who we're not sure his exact name,
Yeah.
actually punches in the code, and
Yeah.
Emerson watches him punch in that code,
Oh,
so
yeah.
that he's able to know what this guy's security code is,
Yeah.
in order to possibly use that, later on. So I like the way that they just give us a little glimpse of that at the same time.
Right.
And then after Emerson takes off, all his hazmat gear, so then we're back outside and we see another guard say, "Go ahead, Rodriguez, I didn't copy." And then basically two of the other henchmen that are outside come close and just shoot him.
I
Again,
like the camp.
I don't know if they're, I mean, it looks like they're using silencers. But
Looks like it.
the fact that one of the guys runs out of the guardhouse means that he heard or saw something. I mean, the other guy did crash into the car and break the window.
Yeah.
But it also shows, it goes back to what we were saying before, that these guys are prepared. Not necessarily for something like this, but they're not slacking off from that perspective.
Right. And I like the editing on when we're outside and they're taking out those two guys outside. It's just everything's kind of quick cuts, it's just yeah, it just shows them taking out those two guys really quickly, and then like the guy starts, stripping off his hazmat gear so that he can, I'm assuming, look like a security guard and pose. He's probably going to be stationed out here for the rest of this mission, to look like a security guard. So
Exactly,
it just good.
which goes exactly with what you were talking about with the comparison to Die Hard with a Vengeance, because they
Oh,
did the
sure.
exact same thing there.
Right. And then they kind of use that same style of it's almost that Edgar Wright style of editing. Once we're inside, back inside the facility, you said his name's Emerson. When he goes to like, hacking the mainframe or whatever he's doing, he's opening bags, he's opening the server thing, he's plugging in wires, he's putting a CD in a slot, and it's all quick cut actiony kind of stuff that it's like, do we really need all this? it's a little much for a, hacking a mainframe sort of sequence.
True, but it still it works in getting us to believe that this is really happening, that type of thing. So once the guards finally kill the once the henchmen kill the guards, so they one of them picks up a radio and radios to Emerson, "Gate secured," and he goes, "Copy." And then at this point, as you said, they strip off their clothes in order to pretend, to make it look like they're the guards who are on duty. And then Emerson starts getting ready to type into the computer to try and get in. And then he goes, "Okay, we're in."
Oh, I noticed the guy playing Emerson, like he definitely dehydrated himself that day in order to film this sequence where he walks in carrying the two, cases. His arms are so veiny and vascular, like it's just one of those. Like I really noticed it, and I'm sure he like made sure his arms. He probably just did a, was just lifting before the camera started rolling. Like I think he purposefully wanted to make sure he was looking swole.
And I love the fact that he walks down the stairs. They took an elevator down to where they are, and now he's just walking down the last flight, I guess. And it says security access level 4, and it says you see it says administration, and then he puts in the code, the same code that he got from the other guy. It's the National Data Administration. That's what they call
Right.
it here. Security access level 4. And then we see the computer checking the ID, and then it approves it and opens up the door. So again, you mentioned the fact that they take too much time possibly showing us all this stuff. But what's cool is that they show us the level of security that they had in this place. And
Yeah,
that's the guy right here.
I like the three
Yeah, the three.
bars at the bottom of the door,
That's
and
it.
there are three at the top as well, but you see the ones in the bottom lower down to let the door open. That's really cool.
That's right. That's right. And then, you know, once he's in, you see more of his veins popping. And you see just the sheer number of computers and servers that are down here. And he looks and he's just really happy.
Yeah, he's smiling to himself.
That's right. And then, you know, he starts he puts down the two cases in order to get to work. And as he does that, you know, we're back with John and Farrell as they're trying to find a way out of the tunnel that they were in. And then Farrell goes, "This is insane. This is absurd. Man, they're tough and they're stupid. You got to go to the hospital. Look at you. I'm not a doctor, but you look like you're hurt." You know, because he's looking at John the way that John is just bleeding all over the place. And John goes, "Yeah, sexy, right?" He goes,
"I like that response." That's a good one.
"Come on." He goes, "We don't need a doctor. We need the cops." So again, this is a scene that is completely not needed in the movie, except for the fact that it gives us more interactions between the two of them to show how very different they are.
Yeah.
You know, John is used to limping around and being all cut up and stuff like that. And obviously, Farrell is not.
Right.
And then we're back with Emerson, who, you know, opens up the computer and we see places to put, CDs. And, you know, he starts connecting all these different wires. So you see, he's not only a terrorist, he's also a hacker.
Yeah. Yeah.
he knows how to get into these things.
Yeah.
And again, as you know, looking at this 18 years later, most people who watch this probably have a better idea of what he's doing than they probably did when this came out in 2007. Because you just see, you know, he hooks something up it's pre USB. I'm trying to remember what it was called.
Drive.
It is a USB. No, it's a USB. Yeah, he connects a USB.
Okay. That's right. Yep.
So that he connects in the USB and then he's connecting in all these different other wires, you know, the AV.
Yeah.
And he pulls out the CD player, which obviously that is completely archaic because.
Yeah, that's the one thing that probably doesn't, you know, really exactly. hold up. But
no, not at all.
It looks like a solid black CD that he puts in there, very reflective black, but it doesn't look silver, you know, that standard sort of. CD color, you know.
Right. Okay, and then we get a shot of the screen of the computer. So I did a quick check as to what's listed here. Did you take the time to read what's on any of these things or not?
I didn't, no.
Okay, so it's got a list of a whole bunch of cities. Yeah. And then it says FRB. And then, so basically it's the name of the bank.
Okay.
So you have the city or state, because it's very inconsistent here. And then the name of the bank, and then it says financial, and then it has like the data size and you know, status and stuff like that. So I just went through the list, and I thought it was really funny because some of the cities just repeat themselves. Okay. So I'm just gonna quickly go through the cities. You have San Diego, Plain Oaks, which I have no idea where that is. Cleveland, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Atlanta, New York, Arizona, New York, Puerto Rico, Charleston, Seattle, L.A., San Diego, Atlanta, Cleveland, New York, Plain Oaks, again, Manhattan, Atlanta. Now, if you look at the source of each of these, so a lot of them say FRB. You have any idea what FRB would stand for?
Let me think. This is all banking stuff, so probably financial records, financial something bank, financial. I don't know.
You see, my guess, and again, I don't know this for sure, is Federal Reserve Bank.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I could be wrong. That's what it seems to be. Again, I have no idea where Plain Oaks is. Have you ever heard of a city named Plain Oaks?
I think I have. Plain Oaks. I didn't look it up, but yeah, I feel like it's a place I've heard of before, but
it doesn't like fit in with all these other cities that we know.
No, it sounds very, you know, rural and very, you know.
Exactly. I just did a quick search and I cannot find any Plain Oaks. I found Twin Oaks.
Oh, okay.
But no Plain Oaks. Huh. That could be like a joke that they threw in there, you know, that
Yeah.
someone grew up in a little town called Plain Oaks, and let's just put it in there, you know, that type of thing. And the reason that numerous cities are listed more than once is because they're different names of banks. So,
Sure.
like with New York, you have the Federal Reserve Bank, and you have the Big Apple Trust, and you have Manhattan Prime Bank, and then you also have the FRB of Manhattan. So it's very funny that they have Manhattan and New York separately, and then all
Right.
the rest are cities, but then you have Arizona. So
Yep.
again, it's a little wishy-washy the way that
Yeah, a little
they did this. But
inconsistent.
again, nobody expects people 18 years after the movie comes out
Sure.
to be going through it minute by minute and figuring out that we actually caught them in inconsistencies.
Sure. But at least the column that says data size, you know, even for the ones like when you have Plain Oaks twice, the data size is different on the second one. Like they didn't just, you know, it's not just a repeating list that you would maybe expect it to be. It is actual, you know, must be a different, you know, different line
That's
item
true.
or whatever.
I wonder which of them has the most data. Okay, it's either
St. Louis starts
no,
with a
it's Atlanta.
nine.
Atlanta's 9-9.
Okay.
There you go. So
Yeah.
it's the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta has the most. I believe followed by the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, 976.
Yeah.
Which 976 is is not necessarily a phone number that one should be calling. If I remember
Oh.
correctly, weren't all those 976 numbers the adult lines, at the
So
time?
yeah, that might be. I can only think of like the what are the ones now? 866, I think, is one that you could use, or I don't know.
He logs in and quickly gets the information and starts downloading everything and smiles once again to himself. And then what's really cool is they show his screen, and then they pan away, and then now we see Mai looking at the screen, the exact same screen, and she says he's in.
Yeah.
It works really well the way that the and obviously Gabriel is quite happy watching it all happen. And then we get a very strange scene here of John and Farrell walking through a crowd of people, I guess showing just the confusion that everyone has here. And
Right.
John just goes, "Get out of the way. Make a hole, please. Come on, watch out. Excuse me, come on." He goes, "NYPD, all right, I got this kid. Come on, let's go, kid. Excuse me, thanks. NYPD coming through." And then they enter a police precinct, and he tries to get the attention of the sergeant at the desk and goes, Sergeant, I need to speak to you." And the sergeant
Yeah.
just like mentions to him that you just gotta wait. I'm
Well,
too
he's,
overburdened right now.
yeah. And he doesn't he direct him to like MedCheck is in the back or something because he sees him. He's like, oh, you must need help.
Exactly.
That guy is Tim Dzarn. I've seen him. Like, he's a recognizable, you know, that guy, just working actor. He was Mary Jane's dad in the first Spider-Man. You only see him like very briefly.
Wait, he was the
Yeah,
guy
it's just
who was like, wasn't he like beating her or something like that? Was that what it was?
yeah, you hear a lot of that. I
Or
don't think
screaming.
it
There
was like
was
his
a lot of fighting.
mostly verbal abuse. Yeah, and then he storms out, or she, you know, she storms out and he follows after her. He's like, "You're trash, you'll always be trash," you know. And then he either goes back in the house or something. But yeah, so you don't see him much, but he's memorable. But I've seen him in a bunch of other things over the years. He's in countless, you know, TV shows and small parts in movies like this. I thought he'd be a bigger part because, you know, watching this the first time and he goes to this police station, I thought, okay, we're gonna be, you know, it almost felt like, oh good, we're gonna check in with, you know, I was really hoping to see some of the people from Die Hard with a Vengeance. And I wasn't clear. Are we in New York right now? Are we in like
No, we're in DC.
throughout the
We're in DC.
throughout the movie, I was kind of like, where are we? You know.
Well, we're in DC, but when they arrived in DC, they were they were stuck in traffic next to a monument that's in Baltimore. But yeah,
Sure.
they're still in DC.
Yeah, okay.
So then, the sergeant then says, "The medic's in the back," and John goes, "I'm all right, NYPD, I need to talk to you." He goes, just give me a minute. And he goes, Sergeant.
Yeah, they realize that he's not going to get anywhere. I like that there's a moment where Matthew, like, takes a moment to look around, and he starts getting overwhelmed. Like, he sees the chaos that all this is causing, and he you know, takes it in. And that's I right. really like that moment there for Justin Long.
That's right. Yeah, just by wiping his face, you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. And then John just says, let's get out of here. And the shot changes again, and we're back with Emerson all alone with the servers, you know, just downloading as much as he can. And then you know, he takes his phone, and he calls them up and basically says, where to go. They're ready to move on to the next stage with what they need. And then Mai reaches Thomas, and, you know, he knows that everything's done, and he goes, okay, launch the downloads. And, you know, Casper gets ready to start doing this stuff, and he starts typing stuff in. And then it's very interesting because, you know, they give us a lot of a shot of Gabriel, you know, just staring at the screen, waiting for this
yeah.
to happen. And, you know, Gabriel gets a little impatient, and he goes, mm-hmm. nothing's happening. And he goes, be patient. And then after a few seconds, he goes, I don't know. It's not responding. And he goes, wait for it.
And I then, like that guy. That's do you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
No, I've never seen it.
Okay. This is a bit player in that show. His name's Uncle Jack. He's played by this guy that plays Casper. Mm-hmm. He's a lot of fun, but it was cool seeing him here.
Yeah. And then, Gabriel decides to gloat a little bit and go, see, you know, as they see that everything is transferred across, you know, it makes you wonder what type of internet lines they had back in 2007.
Oh yeah.
From that perspective. You know, it's amazing the leaps and bounds that the technology has made since then, you know, from that perspective.
Oh, sure.
You know, you watch a movie just from a few years ago and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I know about that.
Right.
They're not giving me anything new here.
How do you feel about Timothy Olyphant? I'm sure you've talked about him. Timothy Olyphant as the villain in this.
Well, so far, in my opinion, of the four that we've talked about, he ranks number four.
Okay.
In my
opinion. I think that's probably fair.
Yeah. You know, he overall, since I have seen five, he still is number four.
Okay, gotcha.
Because it basically the villains, you know, I would probably go 1, 3, 2, 4, 5. That would be my you know, my guess. Even though I do like Colonel Stewart. I do like him, but I still think that Simon's a little better. You know,
absolutely. Better.
So it's like 1, 3, 2,
yeah,
dot 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 four,
right,
dot 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 100 times, 5.
Sure. I don't even know who the bad guy is in 5.
I don't either right now. I can't even remember his name. That's how unmemorable he is.
You know, gotcha.
And that's how we end this minute. Did you have anything else you want, or these minutes? I keep forgetting to say that. And that's how we end these 5 minutes.
Yeah. I don't think I
had.
No, I think I covered all my stuff.
Okay, great. So today's segment will be Top Cop. Okay, where my guests will give their top five police detectives. So Travis, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I struggled with coming up with five. I'm trying. Maybe I'll think of I got four right now. I can only come up with four. Maybe I'll think of something else. But so the number four spot, I've got, it's a small part, but I really like, Steven Rhea in, as Finch from V for Vendetta. And then, it's just, I don't know, when I think about, like, plays it very sympathetic. He's, you know, he wants to catch the bad guy, but he's also like, I don't care. Like, you know, he's sympathetic with what they're, you know, He's also like kind of trying to solve what the heroes are trying to solve, you know. And then I'll put John here at number, what would that be? Number three. You know, like what I don't you know, what can you say? I mean, he's excellent. My number two is Ernie Hudson as Officer Albrecht in The Crow. Because like whenever I think of a policeman, if I wanted a policeman to, you know, be on my side, it would be Ernie Hudson as Albrecht. And then number one, I got to give it to Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon or Detective Gordon in the you know Dark Knight trilogy. Specifically, just like the way he's, I mean, his performance in those movies is fantastic. So.
Oh wow, that is a great list. I'm actually surprised you couldn't think of anyone else to add to that list.
Yeah, I'm sure like if you rattled off some names, I'd be like, oh yeah, that guy. You know what I mean? And I thought about like I tried to like what are some female, you know, police, you know, detectives or just, you know, police characters in movies, and like all the lists were like Jamie Lee Curtis in Blue Steel, I think it is, and then Silence of the Lambs, you know, Clarice.
Clarice,
Like,
right. You
but
have
like
Marge from Fargo.
that was the other one. It's like, you know, it's like I those are great performances. Those aren't movies that I'm like, you know, I've rewatched much. I've seen them, you know, a couple times. You know, they're not ones I revisited. So I don't have like a connection to those characters, you know.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I just couldn't come up with like a ton of like police characters that I really enjoy. But
Well,
you
I'm
know,
actually
if
surprised that you don't have a Rorschach.
oh, Rorschach, yeah, he's not someone you wanna, you know. He's a good character. He's not someone I would, you know, consider to be a good person.
He's gonna be a good person. He has to be a good detective. That's what it
Okay,
is.
I guess I wasn't really looking at the assignment that way, I guess. You
Okay.
know, most of mine are like people I admire, I guess, more. But yeah, he is a good detective. You are right there. Yeah, we'll give him, he's my number five. We'll throw him on there. Because he was right.
Yes. Not that it helped him, but he was right. Okay, great. And then now we have our daily game. State your motto. Okay, so you know that the title of this movie, Live Free and Die Hard, is
Sure.
the state motto of New Hampshire, right?
Yes.
So what I decided to do was is every day we will play a little game. Where I will give a state, and then I will give three choices as to what the possible motto is of that state. Now, all three
Okay.
of these mottos are real mottos of real states. So
Sure.
I'm not making them up. It's just a question of which
Yeah.
one is the one that will correlate to the state that you were given. So
Okay.
obviously, you could probably guess very easily what your state is for today. What would you think?
I'm betting you're gonna give me Indiana.
I am going to give you Indiana. Very good. You are correct. Okay, so here are your three choices. Okay, now again, these are all real mottos.
Sure.
So, okay, A, the crossroads of America. B, the welfare of the people is the highest law. And or C, I will defend.
It's definitely A.
And
B
you.
sounds terrible. What state is B? I guess you'll
I'm
say
not
that
going to tell
for
you now.
right.
You'll
Yeah.
have to wait until someone hears that one,
Right.
but yeah.
But yeah, we are definitely the crossroads of America.
Yes, you are. Did you know that beforehand or not?
Oh yes.
Ah, okay, good.
It's not like something you see everywhere, but like I feel like whenever I leave the state and drive back in, the billboards welcoming you know, those say Crossroads of America. You know, I'm one of those people, like I've looked up the meanings of like my name, and my name, like Travis, means of the crossroads, or that's one meaning.
Oh
And
wow, that's
so it was
cool.
always like it always stood out to me like I'm of the crossroads in the Crossroads of America. You know what I mean? So
That's really cool. Did you have you always lived in Indiana?
Born in Connecticut and then lived in Virginia for a little while. My dad was in the Navy, so we, yeah, Connecticut, okay. Newport News, Virginia, and then Indiana. So
right, okay, fair enough. All right, excellent. So Travis, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Sure, you can find me over at Real Comic Heroes, where I go through a list of comic book movies and review them. And then I'm also doing this, doing this silly Movies by Minutes project with Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And that is over on Minute of Thieves. So yeah, check that out. Yeah, that's it.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So everyone have a great weekend. And Travis and I will be back on Monday. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.